Next week, the biannual International Rim of the Pacific exercises begin in waters around Hawaii and Southern California. Included in the 27 participating countries are China and the Philippines, countries at odds in the contentious region of the South China Sea. That ongoing conflict over authority in the area has developed substantially since the last RIMPAC, and we wanted to know what impact that might have on the maritime exercises this year. We called Ralph Casa, president of the Pacific Forum CSIS, who joins us now. Welcome back.
Well, thank you, Beth. Good to be here.
As we talk about the South China Sea, there's been so much posturing, so many points and counterpoints and finger-pointing and exercises. Do you see this in any way coloring this year's RIMPAC any differently from what we saw 2 years ago?
Well, it will certainly increase the press coverage and will increase the temperature level of those that complain about Chinese participation. But I think at the end of the day, this is focused on naval cooperation, and the navies are here to cooperate with one another.
It's still an exercise where security is an issue and learning how to respond to security issues as well as potential disasters. When you have countries that are needling each other and looking at each other with a bit of a fisheye, is it possible for them to be able to coordinate and cooperate in such a way during these exercises that would be meaningful and genuine without having, you know, some of the others slip in?
No, I think that's a very good concern, but I think it's very important to understand this is a multidimensional exercise. There are things that have to do with humanitarian assistance, disaster relief, submarine rescue operations. There's also some combat and some operational activities. The Chinese will not be participating in the latter. In fact, they are legislatively prohibited from participating in the latter. For instance, there'll be landing exercises on the West Coast. There'll be no Chinese ships involved in that. So they've made an effort. They have to make an effort to sort of separate the security aspects of the exercise from the humanitarian. Now, will the Chinese be able to watch and see how good we are? Yes, and that's not a bad thing for them to see.
By design, that seems to be inherent in the whole exercise, is to see what the other guy, in this case us, may be doing.
Right.
You've just come back from Beijing. As you've been hearing a lot of the conversation about the South China Sea, as well as seeing a lot of the coverage there in China, and even just seeing some of the material that's come through today from the People's Daily. But as the finger sort of being pointed back at the United States,
yeah,
is, you know, hegemony, it's
yeah,
look at the Americas, and that the Americans are being really disingenuous in their supposed call for neutrality and all of this. We're not being very neutral in it. How has that conversation been developed as you've heard it while you were in Beijing?
Well, it's very interesting. You know, the Chinese are very smart, but they have not yet mastered the concept of cause and effect, at least not when China is the cause. So obviously none of the tensions in the South China Sea are caused by Chinese activities, so they must find another reason. So when in doubt, blame the United States, and they certainly have. You know, somehow or other, we are emboldening the Philippines and Vietnam and others to challenge China. It's not Chinese actions. So there's a lot of kabuki going on. There's a lot of name-calling on both sides. But there is still a concerted effort to make sure that there's no crisis, that there's no accident. I worry about accidents, but I don't worry about either side deciding to do an in-your-face operation that would, you know, be a deliberate act of conflict. Nobody wants to have that.
In turning a blind eye, though, to their own actions, there are other ramifications that the Chinese clearly are going to have to deal with. I mean, there are environmental concerns. We've heard from scientists who are calling on other scientists within the broader scientific community to focus on this more. But also there seems to be more pressure for, you know, the United States to make sure that eye gets opened a little bit by showing up a little bit more often. Is that something that you really feel is in the Americans' best interest, to be able to have, you know, more ships go by and take,
yeah,
a look at really what's happening in the South China Sea, or is that destructive?
I think it gets counterproductive at a point. The U.S. for years has been conducting freedom of navigation operations. And we used to do it, what, once every 3 months, once every 6 months, just to make a point. And that's all you have to do to make a point. Now, if we haven't done one in every 48 hours, there's 700 questions from the press. When's the next one? When's the next one? That is not helpful. I will tell you that in private conversations with the Chinese, what they've told me is, look, we understand you're going to continue to do freedom of navigation operations, but could you please do it quietly? If you keep broadcasting it, then we have to keep complaining about it. And that just creates this aura of tension where none needs to exist. In addition to that, you know, every time you conduct a freedom of navigation operation, you're affecting the lives of thousands of U.S. sailors. And if you want to do carrier operations, everyone wants to send a carrier everywhere. This is, you know, a carrier is a city of 6,000 people, and then there's another dozen ships that go with it. Every time you're sailing one into the South China Sea, first of all, you're increasing the op tempo, you're increasing their time away from home, and you're taking away from their ability to do other things. Plus, you don't want to send carriers into shallow waters full of reefs. This could prove to be embarrassing. So the people calling for, you know, daily freedom of navigation operations, or we need to do this once a week, that's ridiculous. The Chinese understand. They've gotten the word. Other countries have gotten the word. So we need to be a little bit more realistic and not be reacting to press demands or Congress's demands during an election year. But actually do things that make strategic sense for the United States.
So how do you get the press to understand some of those really cogent reasons that you gave as to why this is not a good idea and this is just whipping into a frenzy a situation that is already tense and doesn't need any more tension added to it?
I think you have to come on NPR and talk to people about that. Hopefully we've just educated a couple of people, but I think it has to be repeated over and over again. You know, the problem, quite frankly, with all due respect to our press, today they're covering RIMPAC. 2 days from now, they're covering, you know, the latest silly thing that Donald Trump has said. And 3 weeks from now, they're covering a mass shooting somewhere. So we're not really getting educated people who are focused on security issues, who are reporting on these things. And I think it puts an extra burden on those of us who can at least spell the word security to try to explain these things to people and hopefully have them listen.
In listening, someone has to be, first of all, open to listening.
Right.
That seems to be an issue, too, where you have people who are being driven by the emotional, you know, the very persuasive words like, of Donald Trump trying to make America great again and seeing that it's asserting its power in certain ways that you say are not productive. So isn't there sort of going to be a wall there anyway where with a lot of people and unfortunately people who are going to pander to them?
Yeah, I wish you hadn't mentioned a wall. That's another issue. But no, I think it's true. And you know, politics is hard in a democracy any year. It's particularly hard foreign policy during an election year. And, you know, we have to sort of understand that, but we have to be thinking about the impact. I think politicians have a responsibility to think about the impact of their words, not just at home and not just with voters, but internationally as well. And we need to be calling people's attention to that and holding their feet to the fire on that.
As we've called attention to RIMPAC, just to wind up our conversation, not a whole lot different that you're going to see this year, even with everything else that we've talked about?
No, I think the basic effort is still there, focusing on humanitarian cooperation. A few more countries, a few more ships, but essentially this is aimed at Navy cooperation, and that's a good thing.
All right. Thanks very much for joining us. Always good to have you here.
It's my pleasure. Beth Ann, thanks.
Ralph Kosse is president of the Pacific Forum CSIS in Honolulu and senior editor of the Forum's quarterly electronic journal, Comparative Connections. He is the primary U.S. representative and former international co-chair of the ASEAN Regional Forum Experts and Eminent Persons Group, as well as the founding member and current co-chair of the Multinational Council for Security Cooperation in the Asia Pacific.